The Financial Sense News Hour with Jim Poplava continues, featuring uncommon news for the wise investor. Up next, commentary and debate about today's financial issues with the experts. Here's Jim Poplava.
Well, to say that we live in unusual times would be putting it mildly. Each day we see new measures taken by the government or the Federal Reserve. On the day we're talking, the Fed is injecting money into the system, buying commercial paper. Joining us on the program is Bud Burrell. And Bud, I want to start out with two significant events. One was the Enron scandals back WorldCom at the beginning of this decade. They came out with Sarbanes-Oxley, and as a result of that, we went to mark-to-market accounting. And then another event, which occurred in April of 2004, where five of the largest investment banks, headed by Hank Paulson, went to the SEC, and they said, you know what? We're constrained. We're leveraged only 12 to 1. We need to be unconstrained and allow us to leverage up. Let's begin with those two events, and then I want to take that forward with what's going on with naked short selling.
Basically, if anyone's familiar with the Enron story, they were committing a massive accounting fraud. They were basically effectively pushing profits into offshore, what are called special purpose entities. They might be corporations or partnerships, while they held losses here in the U.S. company. It was a violation of both the spirit and intent of FASB's rules under GAAP. But the reaction of the politicians when they became subject to really harassment level, I would call it intimidation and threats from victims of this whole scandal, their reaction was to make a new law as if that was going to solve the problem. New law they made under huge pressure was Sarbanes-Oxley. Sarbanes-Oxley put the mark-to-the-market requirement in there based on the fact that you had to mark your position in whatever asset you were involved with to the last sale, whether it was yours or not, or whether the sale itself was representative or not of the true value of the asset. And I'm going to get into this in more detail, but if they had done away with the mark-to-the-market rule sooner, there would have been no collapse of Bear Stearns, Lehman, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, AIG at all. Instead, okay, you had an artificial environment. Sarbanes-Oxley terribly impaired the capital formation process for small public companies. It drove many of them out of business because they could not afford to actually be compliant with Sarbanes-Oxley because the accounting firms were just simply too expensive for them. And the result was you had the Sarbanes-Oxley, which was bad law made under pressure. And I say to everyone, I have a saying, beware of any law made under pressure. It is generally bad law. Bad law. Now, Sarbanes-Oxley would never have stopped Enron and its guys from ripping and running, no matter what anyone thinks. It might have made them subject to a little bit more oversight than they were, but in general, they were committed to ripping and running, and anyone that thinks that Sarbanes-Oxley would have made a difference is delusional. Now, coming apart from that, that was step one. There were several other things that happened in a related space. One was the issue of this entire Community Redevelopment Act that was put into law in 1977 under Carter and then pushed home during the Clinton administration with a vengeance. And that basically was the idea that they should be lending money to people who couldn't qualify for zero money down. And that is where the subprime mortgage crisis came from, there and nowhere else. I would say effectively what has happened there is initially they were talking about ratios of 10 or 12 for 1 on leverage in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I know tons of people who had those stocks in their retirement accounts. Some had that, those stocks only. And when they collapsed, they wiped those people out. And it collapsed because of absolute sheer corruption at every level. In fact, when states tried to rein in the fraud of origination that was generating these subprime mortgages, they actually acquired a name. They started to call them ninja loans, like Japanese assassin loans. But the joke was, it was a play on the word. There was no income, no jobs, no assets. And so it was a formula for catastrophe, and that's what we've had happen. Then you toss into that mix credit default swaps. Initially, credit default swaps were conceptualized as a market that would be make it possible for people to buy insurance on mortgages and mortgage portfolios. But if quickly, the market expanded to where it became a market of speculation on credit defaults generally, which they hedged hedged by shorting stocks and bonds in relationship to the credit default swaps that were being placed, the bets. Today on C-SPAN, the New York State Insurance Commissioner gave a great synopsis of the fraud as it has occurred and the problems with credit default swaps. And he pointed out that with only 10% of entities doing this reporting, they were showing about a $58 trillion potential contingent liability, which is, to call it irresponsible is an understatement. No one really knows what the total credit default swap market out there is, but that's what took down AIG. It contributed immensely to the collapse and implosion of both Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which were quasi-public corporations who relied on their quasi-public status to sell their paper with a AAA credit rating on it when it didn't warrant that. And what was the thing that tore apart their creditworthiness? Subprime mortgages. And subprime mortgages were all part of a scheme that was set up by the Community Redevelopment Act, which spun off a thing called the Housing Trust Fund, which was abused mightily by politicians. In fact, Acorn came out of the Housing Trust Fund, the money for Acorn. And it's been diverted to things like getting homeless people registered to vote, you know, ad infinitum, ad nausea. And that's maybe the biggest single blast against Obama professionally, is that his first job was as a community organizer for Acorn. So now going back to 2004, the banks had begun to believe that they could make this kind of money off of these various types of products, which were slicing and dicing mortgage portfolios. And the part that they manipulated the most aggressively were the subprime mortgage component, which is about 6% of all mortgages. So the other 94% of mortgages are essentially servicing properly. They are not in default. They're not in arrears. It's just the subprime debt that has really become the crisis. And it started to bleed off into the commercial market sector, et cetera, the commercial real estate markets. Now we're in a situation where they came in 2004 and asked for leverages of up to 100-to-1, where they'd been restricted to 10-to-12-to-1 previously. And absent any other controls, the government agreed to give that to them because they liked what they saw happening with regard to the issuance of subprime mortgages to non-qualified borrowers by originators nationwide. When the state authorities tried to restrict that, they were told to shut up and walk away because they didn't have any authority over this. Only the federal government did. In 2005, John McCain, in a Republican-controlled Congress, put out an initiation to tighten accounting and reporting standards for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac based on the recurring story that no one even knew what their contingent liabilities were. And the result was not just the meltdown of those markets, but with mark-to-the-market accounting, they couldn't even measure Bear Stearns' contingent liability. They said it was somewhere between $110 billion and $220 billion, just on CMOs and CDOs. I don't even know what their credit default swap liability was. No one knows what their largest fails were. There were rumors it was a major New York bank was their largest failure to deliver account. It was because of subprime mortgages and credit default swaps. So you go through the whole story in sequence. It makes rational sense. The problem is, at this particular juncture, no one seems to care. And the bailout isn't going to really impact any easing of credit markets for about, I'd say, a year, if that soon. The fact that you had a credit default swap crisis with regard to so many sectors of the real estate markets has bled off into a crisis now in commercial paper, which the Fed is trying to ease by essentially buying up commercial paper to facilitate just basic trade between companies and their vendors. The company trade can't exist without commercial paper. Commercial paper market is in essentially cardiac arrest right now. Effectively, these leverage issues became out of control, and people forget that only 10-for-1 leverage is what created the 1929 crash, that along with naked short selling of counterfeited securities. The only thing that's different about this crash is that the counterfeit securities were essentially virtual electronic counterfeits as opposed to the physical paper counterfeits.
Explain that if you would, Bud.
Effectively, what it made it possible for people to do was people could sell something they didn't own. There was no delivery requirement being enforced. Okay, there's never been a penalty against someone for failure to deliver. There's never been a buy-in of someone for failure to deliver if he's a market maker. So what if these market manipulators took as a green light was the fact that, hey, no one ever got bought in and there was no hard requirement for an actual borrow from 93 on. They used the word locate and is pyramided out of control. And I think it's on the verge right now of collapsing global economies. Germany is on the borderline of a bankruptcy. This could actually tear the EU currency apart. There's that actual open talk about that this morning from Europe. I hate being so negative all the time. I remember talking to you back on the 1st of July, but if you look back on that interview I gave you then, it turned out to be prophetic. I don't think at this particular point in time anybody can do anything to fix this, because basically anything that they control has already been gamed out of the system. It's a pretty scary scenario.
If I summarize, let's go back. Okay, so we had the Community Reinvestment Act in 77.
Yep.
Loan money to people that can't afford it. That was accelerated under Clinton in 95. 99, they got rid of Glass-Steagall.
Correct.
2001, they had what? Sarbanes-Oxley, mark-to-market accounting.
Right.
2004, they release the leverage ratios, and so you got people like Bear Stearns who went 33 to 1, and some even expect even higher. If
Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac may have gotten as high as 100 to 1.
Yeah. On top of that, they had Reg Sho, which said you're not supposed to do any naked short selling. Then the SEC comes in and gets rid of the uptick rule and doesn't reinforce Reg Sho. And the only time they got to reinforcing Reg Sho was in July, where they said, well, no naked short selling of these 17 financial companies. They got highly...
Jim, that was ignored. I have evidence. I have actual statistical evidence that that restriction was ignored.
There was an article, and they were talking about, if you look at this pattern, whether you look at Bear Stearns, Lehman, AIG, Fannie, Freddie, Wachovia, Washington Mutual, and this pattern was called blast, pause, and blast pattern for stocks. Throw in the rumors. I wonder if we can get to that and if you can explain this and how the regulators are sitting this, allowing this to go unanswered is just beyond me. Now, I understand the FBI and the Justice Department is now coming in to investigate this.
Well, broadly, so you'll know, the pattern has been no different. What was done to Lehman and Bear and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac was no different than the pattern that was done to thousands of smaller companies earlier over a 10-year period beginning in 98 when they changed Regulation T, which was the capital requirements for brokers. And the bottom line is, when you take those points technically and add them up, Reg Sho was a fraud, one. The uptick test was done away with based on a fraudulent, corrupt study. There was no control group maintained in the study. They already knew what they wanted for results. They manufactured a phony study to confirm that. That is one of the most disgraceful pieces of conduct by a regulator in American history. But it goes further than that. You know, the Congress and the Senate were asleep at the switch, the American people even more so. I keep coming back to the fact that the old line back in 96 when the, or 94 when the Republicans took over Congress and the Senate, you got to throw the bastards out. Well, let me tell you something. That's what's got to happen to the SEC. It has to be broken up. It is not a trustworthy organization. And the bottom line is anything that finds otherwise after two falsified studies, the Reg Sho grandfathered all the previously existing failures to deliver, okay? And what has happened is the hedge funds and arbitrageurs and professional offshore accounts that aren't subject to or have not consented to U.S. jurisdiction, they're ignoring these rules. You know what? Our markets don't know the difference. And the bottom line is right now we have no recourse against these parties except to throw them out of office and liquidate their agencies. Doesn't mean some of the functions won't continue, but you could. There's no reason why the SEC should be in the enforcement business. That should go to DOJ. There's no reason why they should be in the market regulation business. They've shown they're incompetent. That should go to Treasury. I am dumbfounded at the conduct of not only our politicians, but our regulators themselves. Believe me, there's many honest people in the government civil service system that are probably radically opposed to this, but they're not in charge. It's almost like the guy that's the back office clerk at Bear Stearns. I mean, he didn't leave there with millions of dollars like some of the partners, and he's screwed to the wall. He's not going to find another job. you're going through a really major deep recession, if not depression. Depression is measured only by the number of quarters of declining earnings, compounded by deflation of hard assets. We're already there. We're in deflation. Japan went into this cycle in 1989. They've been in a deflationary cycle ever since. 19 years later, they're still deflating. You know, I hope to God it doesn't last that long here, but they've created almost a perfect storm. Every part of the system broke down, either because of corruption or incompetence or both. And it's a pretty terrifying scenario. I don't think that anyone understands that this is the end of the beginning of this problem, not the beginning of the end of this problem. This could take 7 to 10 years to resolve itself, if it can be resolved in that period of time. Because bluntly, they've allowed these speculators to create positions that they simply don't have the assets to settle. Our markets cannot settle. There's not enough money in the system.
You know, this is the most frightening thing about all of this, Bud. I want to come back to naked short selling, but let's go to credit default swaps for a moment. The global credit default swap market is somewhere around 62 or 63 trillion. Now, originally,
it's actually 10 times larger than that. With only 10% of members of the association reporting, you've got 58 trillion. 10%. So you don't know what the other 90% are. I think the J.P. Morgan Chase credit default swap position has got to be somewhere in the range of 90 trillion. And it's obviously not a reporting member, because that one number would skew this return if those numbers are, if that's an accurate report.
Let's take this market. Originally, it had a purpose, and that was to allow people that maybe bought a bond that they wanted to hedge against risk, and they wanted to insure it against.
Yeah, it's a put option.
Yeah.
Variation of a put option. It was even priced with the same theory.
Okay, so the original assumption behind this market might have had altruistic purposes. But when you allow, like if I'm an insurance company, let's just take AIG. They have insurance products, and they sell life insurance, other kinds of insurance. They have to set aside reserves. They invest those reserves so that when the day of reckoning comes, somebody passes away, if it's a life insurance contract, or if even if it's an insurance company in an auto accident, they have money there to pay those that took out the insurance. That is not taking place with credit default swaps. It's they take in the premiums come in, they enhance the returns of the hedge funds, and you have this whole process called dynamic hedging. Rather than setting aside the money to handle these defaults, they would just, if the market goes against them, they would dynamic hedge and maybe take out a credit default swap with somebody else, and now you got counterparty risk. And everything that I read, Bud, is telling me whether I'm looking at Moody's, Standard & Poor's, any of the rating agencies, Fitch, are talking about a 30% increase in corporate bond defaults and also municipal defaults next year. What's going to happen when you have a market that is so huge that there is simply no reserves to back up when these companies go under?
I don't know what's going to happen. It's not a pretty picture. I don't want to be the person that throws the last log on the fire here that burns down the house. But the bottom line is, you're going to have to go back to the people who created this crisis, and you're going to have to hold them accountable. Jim, you understand accountability. I do. I've understood it from all the time, way back to when being a kid. You know, when my parents were teaching me not to lie, cheat, or steal, the same thing pertains to these people. They have been conditioned that they can lie, cheat, and steal with impunity, with no consequence. Part of it is too many lawyers have contaminated the system. I know many honest, high integrity for lawyers personally, many of whom are representing some of the victims in this case. But having said that, the bottom line is it's a mentality. There's no right and wrong. There's only the law. Well, bluntly, these laws are being ignored wholesale. The SEC is acting as if the laws that were passed by Congress are nothing more than guidelines for them that they can choose to ignore or not as they see fit. Section 17A of the 34 Act has been around a long time, and it says you've got mandatory three-day delivery. Mandatory three-day delivery. It's been that way for years, and no one has ever enforced it. No one. They enforce it on a retail account, but try to, you know, no institutional account has ever had three-day mandatory settlement. Not ever. There's never been a buy-in that I can track to a specific conduct by a market maker, broker, dealer, or hedge fund account. They exempted them from even the locate rule under the 93 rule change. Then you talked about leverage. In 1998, they revised Regulation T and passed that rule. And the bottom line is, from there, it's just been a cascading effect downhill. You've described it very precisely. It's a cascade. It's like a snowball rolling downhill, gaining momentum at every rotation. As it picks up more support, more people turning their head the other way, more corruption in the laws, to the point now where they've crashed not just the economic system of this country, but they've made the reserve status of the dollar come into question. Believe me, that is on the table here. It wouldn't be hard to substitute in a basket of other currencies from other countries in the world, because, you know, we're big as I think the next five economies combined. You take those five economies and create a synthetic security out of what is called a bundle or a package, okay, or a basket. Effectively, what you've done now is you actually have a viable alternative for replacing the dollar as the world's reserve currency of value. It's the reserve of value that is actually given the dollar its status. And that is being fundamentally attacked, not just by our enemies, but by people here who have committed treason and don't know it. They consciously ignored the law that says engaging in a financial syndicate to manipulate the assets of the United States is an act of insurrection or sedition. That's the law. That's CGS sections 22, 22A, and 46. Those laws are the foundation of RICO, the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Holding Company Act, the Investment Company Act of 1940, ad infinitum ad nausea. We have to take into consideration that we can no longer trust our regulators or our politicians to tell us the truth. It's just that simple. And there's got to be somebody holding their feet to the fire and making them accountable for their representations and rewarding them for doing things right and punishing them for the things that they've done on a level that's malfeasant or corrupt. There can't be, you know, an A pass for them, and there cannot be a special pass for lawyers because they don't have any liability for this. Because, believe me, Enron had a qualified opinion on every one of his special purpose corpses as being compliant with the law even without issues of intent, going all that way back. And anyone that thinks, again, that law was going to change Enron's corporate behavior is delusional.
Here's the problem, though. You know, as I mentioned, there's a sequence to all of this, going back to the Community Reinvestment Act,
sure,
mark-to-market accounting, lifting the leverage rules, reg show, no reinforcement. How do you get, Fox News did a special this weekend, and they got to the Community Investment Act. They got in 2001, where the Bush administration tried to rein in Fannie and Freddie. They were stopped. They tried it again in 2003. They were stopped. McCain tried it in 2005. He was stopped. You've got the head of the Senate Banking Committee getting loans from Angelo Mozzillo at Countrywide,
right,
below market. They've got huge contributions, including Barack Obama, second on the list.
Second on the list with only 3 years in office. The other guys have been around for 20 years.
Yeah. And then you've got everybody finger-pointing. And even in this last bill, this rescue package, I understand there were, you know, Christmas ornaments on the tree.
Huge.
That were doled out. It is so corrupt. How does one turn away from that corruption? In other words, if the people that were involved in the Community Reinvestment Act, stopping Fannie and Freddie, or the people that cooked the books are now advisor to a possible president, I mean, what does that tell us?
Well, I interviewed one of the top lawyers, law professors in this country for something I was doing. And I asked him, I said, what is the potential outcome here? And he said, I never would have said this. He's 75 years old. He's no kid, and he's brilliant beyond imagination. He said, if the system can't fix itself through evolutionary processes, it will be fixed by civil unrest processes. Again, I've said this before, I'll say it again. If the American people figure out how much money has been stolen from them and shipped offshore by a relatively small number of people, they're going to go ballistic, and they should. And I'm not calling for revolution, but I'm saying until there are public demonstrations in the street, until people unify to say this has got to stop, it won't stop. Every time these guys pull another stunt like this bailout bill, all they do is tell the American people that you guys, we can pull the wool over your eyes anytime. You're not smart enough, you know, to stop us. The problem is the old line. You can lie to some of the people some of the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't lie to all of the people all of the time. And that's what they're doing, the latter. It's an act of hubris, in total insane arrogance and chutzpah.
I wonder, just to put this in perspective, in terms of what has been done to many of these institutions, not to mention the thousands of companies that have been put out of business through the same process. But do me a favor, take us through this, what we call the blast, pause, blast pattern in the stocks that we've seen from Bear Stearns, Fannie, Freddie. It's my understanding when it came to Fannie and Freddie, good majority of the stocks sold didn't even exist. It was mainly naked.
That's right. And that naked shorting continued even during the period when the SEC barred naked shorting of those stocks.
How do they get away with this?
Because the SEC, they know the SEC is a toothless tiger about enforcing naked short selling regulations. They've never brought a naked short selling case. Ergo, you're a naked short seller. Are you afraid of the SEC? Not an inch. I remember at the NASA forum in November of 2004 on or about, James Bergagliano, Deputy Director of Enforcement under Linda Thompson for the SEC, was confronted by Dr. John Finnerty on the dais. And he said, John, why don't you tell us about your most, Jim, this is John Finnerty speaking, Jim, why don't you tell us about your most important naked short-selling case? Well, he was deadly silent. The reason he couldn't talk is because he had never brought a case. Not only not him, but no one in the enforcement division. Then they started rigging these studies. Then one thing they did, they studied 1,000 stocks to see what the impact of naked short selling was on their markets to determine if it was materially adverse. The tricky part about it is they didn't maintain a control group of another comparable 1,000 stocks to see whether or not they did better than the 1,000 stocks in which they unleashed naked short selling. Absent a control group, their study is a mess. It's worthless. Throw it in the trash can. It had no meaning. And the arrogance of these people is insane, because more than several of my experts that I work with has picked up the fact that they did this without maintaining control groups. And it wasn't the first time they'd done this. Control groups are prima facie requirement of fundamental research methodology. If you're trying to determine the impact of an action on a class, you have to have some equivalent class in which the action is not impacting to have a comparative standard. Well, they just forgot that. I'm amazed. You know, this is during a period for the last 4 or 5 years they've been told by their principal protective authorities that they cannot take one-on-one meetings with victims that they raped and run and destroyed, you know, for their own physical safety. Well, that's insane, guys. Nothing should allow that to happen, Jim.
I guess where I'm leading this, we've seen where Congress has been on the take with Fannie and Freddie, and they're still on the take. One of the presidential candidates has been on the take. The SEC turns the other way. How does this get resolved? Is the Justice Department, what about the FBI investigations into this? Do you think anything will come of that, or is this just a show?
I think there are people within Department of Justice who would like to see this stopped. I don't think they're in charge. I have communicated directly with two White House general counsel, with an attorney general, with numerous federal investigative agencies, with four or five federal task forces. I've lost track. I can't remember anymore. But the point I'm trying to make to you is they seem to think that they are not accountable to the American public. Well, I'm seeing more and more people become aware of what naked short selling is and how adverse it is for markets. And the bottom line is the people who are responsible for this subprime crisis are our politicians, the people who write our laws, because they wouldn't allow those laws to be properly enforced with ethical and rational controls. And the result was is that, you know, the Housing Trust Fund is nothing more than a slush fund for liberal interests. And they're using money that's supposed to go for subprime mortgages to do voter development programs for low-income communities. And the bottom line is the greatest fraud of all is that they're doing those communities a favor. They're just destroying them. An involuntary foreclosure on a mortgage is personal bankruptcy. It's the closest thing to a financial rape that you can impose on someone. And they just continue to ignore it. And I've got to tell you, somebody's just got to say to them, you know, enough. Stop no more, or we're going to throw you in jail. Or worst case is, you know, if you've stolen money and shipped it offshore, you know, we're going to give you an option. Bring it back from offshore, or lose your passport and die in a jail cell. $10 trillion at least has been shipped offshore. $10 trillion. Our total retirement accounts in this country are only $17 trillion. Jim, this is as close to being out of control, and I don't like being negative. The talking heads on CNBC never talk about a meltdown. That's the only possible potential outcome. I've been calling for telling people for 4 years, reel it in and control your greed or you're going to destroy the system. So they're not just biting the hand that fed them, they're killing the life structure that supports them.
It's amazing when you see this. I mean, I can look at this sequentially, but when I'm looking at this, how could we have gotten to where we are today? If I would have gone on the air in January and said that the major brokerage firms would go under, the largest insurance company would go under, Fannie and Freddie would go under, WaMu and all these banks, people would have thought I was nuts. But if you look at the sequence here, beginning, going back once again to the Community Reinvestment Act, its enhancement in 95 under Clinton, getting rid of Glass-Steagall, Sarbanes-Oxley, mark-to-market accounting, lifting of leverage rules, the lifting of the uptick rules, regs show there is a pattern here that plays into, it would be like if you were to say, let's put the mafia in charge, and what would the mafia like to see? Every single one of these steps, but you don't hear any of this laid out in the way I just did. If you're even reading the Wall Street Journal, you may get snippets here and there. Well, maybe some naked short selling here, or maybe some of this mark-to-market accounting. And here we are on the day you and I are talking about. The Fed is intervening in the commercial paper market now. The Fed, never before. You have the Fed's balance sheet. And I want to talk about another institution. Let's go to the commodities and exchange. Between July and August, the short position on the COMEX in gold went up tenfold. On the silver contract, it went up fivefold, equal to almost 1 year's worth of production of silver.
Correct.
Now, there's no way, Bud, that you can allow short sellers to come in and sell an entire year's production of silver and ever hope that they would ever be able to deliver if somebody requested delivery on those contracts.
That's a very astute observation, Jim. As I know, many of your listeners are people who are involved with mining stocks. A friend of mine is someone that I've known for years who's involved in actually validating depository certificates on both gold and silver, and he estimates that maybe as many as 90% of the depository receipts he has have no physical gold or silver behind them. And he's someone who consumes both products for industrial purposes. And I said, you're telling me that you bought this stuff for future delivery and you know it's not there. And he said, yes, that's exactly where we're at right now because of short selling.
It was amazing. When I saw gold get hammered, silver get hammered, and I was watching, and I'm not going to mention the name of one of the investment banks, not only were they going short here, but they were also short 50,000 contracts in the TOCOM because it would start in Asia, work its way to Europe, and then on the way here. And the thing that I was looking for, Bud, I can remember a day that silver dropped to $12.75, and I bought a ton of silver. And I went through three dealers, and they told me 8 to 10 weeks. You know what they just told me? 14 weeks.
And I don't believe that.
Yeah, and I don't even know if even that's a possibility. So you've got silver prices down on the day you and I are speaking. Silver's down 22%, gold's up 5%. And yet you can't get your hands on silver. If you go on eBay, the premiums for a silver eagle, you know, we've got silver at $11.51. It's going for $20.
Right.
You've got shortages in Johannesburg, Mumbai, Dubai. So there is a major disconnect here between what they are allowing to take place on the exchanges. I mean, the CFTC and the COMEX has just become a pool for short selling.
So you'll know, is now regulated by the SEC by the merger that occurred, you know, a couple of years ago. The problem is that bluntly, they're taking their guidance in terms of anti-naked short-selling issues from the SEC, which is doing nothing. They've been investigating the failure to enforce naked short-selling rules on several companies, okay? And it's been going for months. It's a joke. It's not a joke. It's a tragedy, okay? History repeats itself, first as farce and then as tragedy. Well, we're in the tragedy phase here. Same thing. The OAG, GAO, is supposed to be doing an investigation of the SEC for its internal abuses of its own processes. No report. It's been going for months. The SECIG is supposed to be investigating the SEC itself for a failure to enforce naked short-selling rules and restrictions and settlement. Failures to deliver issue here is insane. And it's very interesting. The exchange-rated securities, exchange-traded securities, have these clearing corporations, like the Options Clearing Corporation by way of example, and they haven't had, okay, a failure of a security because of anything related to something related to failure to settle. They settle. I've talked to one of my good friends about that. I said, they've got to settle the markets. And the commodity guy, options guy, and he said, bud, he said, if you settle the markets, everybody will bankrupt. There won't be any markets. And that's a terrifying statement. This is a 35-year professional acquaintance who I have implicit trust of, and he says, he said, you got no idea what the problem is. As an example, credit default swaps. It was proposed that the CME, Chicago Mercantile, would actually make the markets in credit default swaps on the exchange. And they got a violent pushback from J.P. Morgan, Citibank, et al., saying, no, we want to trade these things over-the-counter, ex-clearing, so that they, you know, no one ever sees what positions are being taken by what parties. And that's a formula for catastrophe. There's a word here, transparency. There has to be some sort of rational transparency in our settlement processes, or we have nothing creditable for markets. Our markets are no longer creditable.
I was talking to an individual, and we were talking about when gold was being taken down almost $20 a day. I think there was like almost a 10-day period. And I'm not going to mention the firm. He had talked to an individual firm where the traders are one of the largest settlement groups in the gold market. They almost like a broker. So if you want to buy gold, they're going to put you in touch with somebody that wants to sell gold. During these days, all they were getting coming into their trading desk were buy orders, no sell orders, and they were puzzled. They were going, how is this happening? How can we have all these buy orders coming in and no sell orders, and they're taking the price down? And here we are today, bud, where if you want to go out and buy a 10-ounce silver bar, a 100-ounce silver bar, good luck. They're taking this down, and it's disappearing around the globe. It just goes to show you how corrupt even our commodities market. And let me ask you this. Given the corruption that we've seen here with our mortgage securities, is the U.S., in essence right now, in the process of not only forfeiting its role as the financial center of the world, but also in danger of losing the status of the dollar as the currency of the world, because the markets are so corrupt here? How can you trade commodities here where the commodity prices are driven so low, and yet you can't get a hold of there's shortages. You can't get gold buffaloes, gold eagles, silver eagles without paying premiums way above where the spot price is.
You're seeing the classic signal, a supply-demand imbalance. You're seeing excessive supply being created through the artificial creation of supply by electronic counterfeiting. And when they say they're selling something, they the markets always presume there's something there that is actually being sold. And that is a completely fallacious assumption. You cannot look at any security, stocks, bonds, physicals, forwards, futures, options, and presume that a seller actually owns anything. It's catastrophic for the issue and concepts of under our Constitution of title. The Fifth Amendment implications are staggering. Staggering. And yet no one has the nerve or the courage or the moral integrity to confront this. And if they did, this would stop so fast it would snap everyone's neck. One person only needs to stand up. Tricky part about it is I don't know what's going to happen to that person. There are, organized crime interest globally that would probably try to assassinate that person. Organized crime is in this up to their elbows. I interviewed one convicted criminal felon of a major organized crime family, and the bottom line is he said that this form of financial fraud, meaning counterfeiting of securities, is the new drugs. They realize they can make a lot more money with a lot less heavy lifting by doing financial fraud in syndicates than they can by actually shipping and delivering something. And that's what nobody here is getting. This is a pattern, and there are people in charge of this globally. And the other thing you have to understand, the numbers in terms of dollars and currencies and assets are so enormous. If anyone thinks it's possible for this to happen without the global banking backbone seeing it, again, they are ignorant of the process. Everything happens on a banking backbone. Everything.
Where are the, Bud, I guess the Giulianis? Giuliani came in, he cleaned up, he went after the mob. Where are the Elliot Nesses? Where are those people? I mean,
they're out there, Jim. They have no power. And if they even raised that kind of issue, they are just slapped down harshly. A lot of times their careers are ended. I don't know where the help's going to come from here. And I've got to tell you something. I've emphasized this to you in my first talk, you know, over 3 months ago. I've been a development stage company specialist. The very earliest stages are where I really like to be. It hasn't been lucrative, but it's been very rewarding emotionally. Can I tell you something? Today, I can't honestly tell any company that they have any chance in hell of having any shot at success in this country. They just can't do it. The system is so overweighted against them, they don't have an ice cube chance in hell of being successful. And the bottom line is it's the most, you've got to remember that if it wasn't for the small company sector, there not only would not have been 40 million jobs created in the last 35 years, there would have been no new wealth creation. All new wealth creation of substance came out of companies that were penny stocks in the 1970s. That couldn't happen today because, again, they've given these criminals the right to sell something they don't own without the knowledge or consent of the system or the owners. I don't, you know, bluntly, the term outstanding shares on a financial statement has absolutely no meaning. The same thing on depository receipts. What do depository receipts mean if there's no physical asset behind them? You take the strategic minerals as a class, whether it's gold, silver, molybdenum, titanium, you name it. There is no assurance on the part of anyone that there's any physical asset behind synthetic titles. Okay? And the bottom line is without that, without those basic assurances of validity of the assets being there that are being sold, you're destroying investor confidence on a level that I don't think I see it coming back for maybe as long as two generations. Not 10 years, not 7 years, 40 years. And the bottom line is God knows what would happen in the interim. This is it's a formula for not just economic catastrophe, it's a formula for political catastrophe. Our democracy depends on people's ability to rely on the validity of our legal system. Our legal system is in the tank, totally.
Mm.
And it's a terrifying, terrifying scenario. I wish someone could give me some hope. I'm talking to some of the brightest people I know in this country, and they can't give me any hope.
Is it that corrupt? In other words, this almost reminds me of the fall of the Roman Empire, where the Senate became so corrupt, you went to a dictatorship with the emperors. The emperors became corrupt.
Correct.
And crazy, where, you know, you'd go from one emperor to another. I mean, if you look at even some of the political leadership, where you're looking around the globe, whether you're looking at prime ministers in Japan or presidents or prime ministers in Italy, we're going through them like a dozen eggs. It's just one leader after another. And who knows, maybe we'll throw the Republicans out this time, and then 2 years from now, we'll be throwing the Democrats out. It just doesn't. Where does this lead? Dictatorship? Is it going to take a strong man that finally comes up and takes reins and cleans it up? Or where do we go?
I don't know. Maybe we've reached the point of non-sustainability of our democracy. I think that's pretty close to that point right now. They've actually brought back military units from overseas, reportedly, to control civil unrest, which is a violation of the whole posse comitatus statute of the Constitution. That hasn't happened since Waco, between you and I. My concern, I don't have an answer for this, Jim, is that maybe a constitutional convention is needed here, where we basically just, in the chess analogy, knock all the pieces off the board and restart the game. I'm not sure anything short of that is going to clean up this mess. And it's a mess. I've never, except for, you know, issues of where I was positioned when I went to the military, I was really prepared to make the military a life's profession for myself. Injuries and more kept me out of that. But I would tell you, in no uncertain terms, that there are Americans who are simply not going to tolerate it. And if they have to tear the government down and start a new constitutional convention and reinvent our government and our laws from scratch, it'd have to be healthier than what we've got.
You know, it's amazing. In this presidential election, there was a gentleman by the name of Ron Paul.
Yeah, I know him.
And came out there, talked about the unsoundness, talked about what we were doing to the Constitution. Unfortunately, he didn't garner any support within the Republican Party.
Well, it was worse than that. The press annihilated him because he was against their interests.
Yeah, they made him sound like some whacked out dude. But, you know, all the things that he was warning and talking about, we're seeing unfold here.
I'm sympathetic to Paul's position because you've got to, if you go back and read everything that I've written since 2002, this is precisely what I told everyone would happen if they allowed this naked short-selling to continue without abatement. Because effectively what everyone missed was they thought it was naked short-selling of just stocks. It wasn't. It was naked short-selling of everything. People were selling things they didn't own in every class of security. And the abuses were most egregious in securities that were not exchange-traded because there was never any forced settlement. The failures to deliver are right now in a position where they could. The market couldn't settle out the current outstanding failures to deliver if they tried. I talked to one expert about the failures to deliver that were grandfathered by the original regulation SHO. People forget that Reg Sho was the product of a three-year comment period that began July 24th of 1999. After that happened, okay, they took two more years at the end of the comment period to produce a regulation, which they then delayed for another year before they implemented it. And then they tacked on a thing called grandfathering. They said, okay, any shorts that existed before this regulation became effective do not have to settle. Well, today, 3 years later, if they were going to settle, they could not settle them anyway because many of the counterparties on these trades are no longer in business. There's no one to go to for the counterparty part of the trade. That's my concern about our entire financial system. The concept of legitimate, honest trading has simply evaporated. Even between dealers, it's evaporated. Dealers don't trust other dealers. They, you know, that was a fundamental core of Wall Street as it existed when I came there in 1973. Today, people don't trust, dealers don't trust other dealers. That's a formula for a meltdown. If you can remember what happened, all they had to do was somebody circulated the rumor that some trader wasn't going to accept Bear Stearns trading credits, and that was it. Game over. Stock company was gone in a week.
The amazing thing about this, and I'm not sure, I guess maybe I'm looking at this from an optimist point of view, when I see people like Ron Paul, people like yourself and others out there, we did a special on crime of the century. We talked about it last year. I did a 5-part special. And one of the things that we did is we said, look, turn this in, people, to the SEC. We had one thing I've learned from all of this. I can't even trust my government.
No, you cannot. If you, anyone who made a complaint to the SEC that wasn't made in a group, a large group, that wasn't made in parallel to their congressmen and senators, with explicit threats of outing them if they screw it up, has gotten no responses. I remember there were the SEC admitted to 2,700 written responses to Reg Sho during the comment period, and there's been that many more again since then. There's a general rule that for every 1,000 complaints that somebody gets in the securities industry, only one will actually be turned into something written. So try to imagine 2,700 complaints, which is probably now 5,000 complaints, represents actually 5 million complaining parties. And what have they done? Nothing. Greg's show is so bad, it is an embarrassment. It is not being enforced, even in the presence of them saying that that's the new rule. I don't know where this goes, Jim, but I got to tell you, it's not a pretty picture, and I can't get anyone to tell me how they're going to fix it, because you know what? They don't know. No one's ever been on this ground before. You and I aren't old enough to have lived through anything even approximating a catastrophe of this scope. This is not 1929. This may be the Cook Islands collapse in Britain in 1720, or worse. Because right now, the only thing that could end this depression and take everyone's eye off the ball, and this is the terrifying scenario, is a war. The only thing that ended the Great Depression was World War II. If it hadn't been for that, it would have run another 20 years. Damn near did anyway. The markets didn't even start to show any strength till 1954. That was 21 years after the bank collapse. Okay, it was 25 years after the actual meltdown of the market, which was a completely orchestrated raid. It was no accident. I mean, if anyone remembers, what, Jim, I'm sure you remember, the margin rule then was only 10-for-1 leverage. This is insanely larger.
You look at this and you just have to think on the positive side. But I think, you know, what you're bringing up here, Bud, is we've simply have not seen this before. And I think one of the expressions or comments that I heard was by Senator Harry Reid. And he says, nobody's doing something here because nobody here really knows what to do. And you almost get the feeling, whether you're it's Hank Paulson, it's the president, it's Congress, or it's Ben Bernanke, this is being done on an ad hoc basis. You know, they let Bear Stearns collapse, and then they arranged a marriage. Then they go in, they take over Fannie, but they let Lehman go and didn't realize 2 days later they had to come in and backstop the money market funds that were breaking the buck.
Yeah.
And it was AIG. It's like they make a policy decision, and then all of a sudden they see the carnage that comes afterwards. And I go, well, that didn't work. Let's try something new. It's like there doesn't seem to be a plan here. And I'm like, I'm not a policymaker, but number one, you get rid of mark-to-market accounting. You enforce reg show. And you start having public trials and bringing these people to justice. And you start having investigations and saying, look, you do this, like you said, if you've squirreled away $10 trillion offshore that you've made, and I heard that there was at least billions made on the Fannie and Freddie short was squirreled.
Billions. It was being shorted aggressively after it was barred from being shorted. They wanted to ensure there was no short squeeze in those stocks.
And then you start enforcing leverage rules and say, look, over the next 2 to 3 years, like, for example, Goldman and Morgan have turned into banks now, so they've got a 2-year period where they've got to take their leverage down. I think Goldman is now down to 20 after Warren Buffett came in a capital raise. But there are things that could be done here to fix this instead of what they're doing. And that's maybe the most frustrating thing here is to see the obvious, as you have pointed out here, the things that can be done, the things that should be done, and they're not being done. I guess that's where the frustration really
comes. There's really only one draconian solution that I can come up with, and that is force the markets to settle. Stop the leverage, because that's going to be horrendously painful. It's going to inflict a terrible pain on and, you know, injury on a lot of innocent parties. But there is nothing else that's going to fix this, and that is force markets to settle. Clean up all of these counterfeit, you know, shares and assets that have been issued. Stocks, bonds, physicals, forwards, clean them out of the system. If you don't do it one time, you're never going to get it under control. It's just that simple. Settle the markets. And anyone who says anything else, as far as I'm concerned, simply isn't a professional. Worse than that, they are probably, you know, they are collaterally dirty for aiding and abetting the criminals who are doing this. Believe me, this is criminals. They know they may not be guys who carry guns and have, you know, accents, but they're just as much organized criminals as any mobster ever was in history. And they've made a lot more money a lot faster.
Well, Bud,
I'm sorry, that's the only place I can come down. You know, if you don't settle these markets, we will never see this problem resolved.
Well, Bud, if you were to put your thought on something hopeful right now, what would that be?
I have a running joke that I hope the aliens are friendly. That's one. Okay, there's both. World, according to the predictions of several different sources, the world ends on December 21st, 2012. And I hope the aliens don't look at us as some sort of contaminated ants or a good food supply. But having said that, it's not just our markets that are corrupt. America has become a culture of corruption. We have corruption pandemically throughout our society. You can't pick up a phone bill or a cell phone bill or a bank statement or a credit card statement without finding fraud somewhere. Just not possible. Everybody's trying to get over on somebody else. The idea of an honest business, money made the hard way by honest work, has simply gone away. And we have made heroes, folk heroes, out of these guys, these major hedge fund operators who paid themselves, you know, over $1 billion a year for the last years. I mean, I remember something like over 200 hedge fund managers averaged $877 million apiece. Those guys aren't heroes. If anyone thinks they made that money by making the system work, they didn't. They made this money by taking advantage of the system. We've got to stop people from taking advantage of America. And whatever it takes to get to that point is what is going to have to happen. That's the only hope I can give anybody. You better make people accountable, and you better be prepared to stand up and be heard, or I'm telling you right now, we're on a train to hell right now. Sorry, that's all I can tell you.
But as we close, if people would like to follow your work and become more informed on the corruption and the things that are going on, why don't you give out a couple websites?
One of the great websites is www.thesanitycheck, T-H-E-S-A-N-I-T-Y-C-H-E-C-K. Another superb site with maybe some of the best writing of any of the websites out there. Maybe, in fact, it is the best writing, is deepcapture.com, which is sponsored by Overstock, actually by Patrick Byrne personally. But it's got some extraordinary writing by Mark Mitchell, which I would encourage everyone to look at. And if you can get through those websites and their content, you're going to know more about this than you'll be comfortable with anyway. I would be the places where I would send you first. And I've done a number of radio interviews on Christian Traders, which is another small radio station here in Phoenix. It actually became number one on the Street IQ, the work that I did for them, along with others, and many of whom I brought to them. So I would say to you that, like I said, the web is full now of people coming out opposing naked short selling. There's all sorts of news sites. I am not up on all of them. I've bluntly been involved in a project for about 9 months now that has caused me to have to even stop posting. I just haven't had the time. But the radio interview I did with you in July, if people haven't heard that, I encourage you to go back and listen to it a second time. It looked like prophecy. I did a speech for the Rotary Club of New York back in on September 15th that was turned out to be literally written in stone. And that's all I can tell you in the context of where they should go. I mean, if they're not keeping up on this, Jim, I'm going to send you some articles that you can put up on your site that are just more recent over the last month and a half or so. And they're coming from one of the most credible sources out there who remains anonymous because he has genuine concerns for his physical safety. I can tell you that there's been every attempt to intimidate the people who have been opposed to this wholesale corruption. I've been subjected to it repeatedly with great severity, but I'm not the only one. I could point five or six other people out to you who've also been harassed. The key is, I'm not going to go away, no matter what, and the bottom line is right now, I don't think anyone else can afford to go away like you. We have to keep getting the story out there, because every time someone listens to this story, they'll go out and tell it to two or three other people. Now, if this story were slanderous of an individual directly, they'd go out and tell it to 10 people. That's one of the problems of telling good stories about what needs to be done from the rights perspective, I mean the perspective of being good and decent. Those aren't hot or sexy topics generally. This is kind of too many people try to say this is too arcane for them to understand. Well, it's their retirement accounts. They better understand it. I hope that helps, Jim.
But as always, I appreciate you coming on the program. You always lend some insight into, once again, what I have called the crime of the century. There's nothing looking back over the last 200 or 300 years that would even come close to what's going on here in our markets. Thanks so much for joining us on the program.
All right. Thank you very much, Jim.